Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. Selma Berkman and Estelle Krugman are interviewing Myrtle M. Fisher, Mrs. M. H. Fisher, on December 11, 1975, side number 3. You mentioned some of the people that were in your class. Could you tell us who some of your good friends were at that time, your contemporaries?
Well, some of my best friends were the young people who were in my clubs at the Iron Cotton Settlement, and they still are to this very day. Esther Lencher, for instance, who's Esther Siegel, who now lives in Hawaii. Dora Eisenstadt, who is, she was a Dora Tex, rather.
Now how do you spell that?
T-E-X, Dora Tex. T-E-X, Eisenstadt. Now lives in Wilmington, Delaware. Ruth Muller Glick.
M-U-L-L-E-R?
M-U-E-L-L-E-R, Glick.
What was her first name?
Ruth.
Which Glick was that? Who'd she marry?
She was David Glick. She was divorced.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. She
was a pianist.
Nope.
Wasn't that the one?
No.
That's a different David Glick,
yeah,
then.
Mm-hmm. I know the one that you're talking about. That was Pesha Kagan's husband.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This first, Esther
Lencher.
L-E-N-Lencher.
L-E-N-C-H-E-R. It's Ben Lencher's sister.
And her last name now?
Siegel.
S-I-E-G-E-L.
She's still, I'm not sure if that's what she said. These are the kids that were in school. Molly Healthman, Rose Grossman. I mean, these are
Molly who? Have you
Molly Healthman, H-E-L-F-M-A-N.
And any of them, are they all living now? Some of them?
Every one of them are living.
Do you still keep in touch?
Keep in touch with them. Some of like Esther Lynch, Esther Landau, Esther Rogo Landau.
Mm-hmm.
One of my closest friends to this very day. Mm-hmm. I have never
L-A-N-D-A-U?
Right. I've never lost the association with my old friend and never hope to, never want to, rather. Mm-hmm.
Let's we've gone through the education here. What did you study in high school?
I studied English, the usual subjects. I took a commercial course, but I also took extracurricular subjects such as French, and of course everybody had to take English. Mm-hmm. But primarily I took a commercial course because in those days not too many girls went to college.
Were you tempted to go to college?
I was tempted, and I probably would have gone to college because being the youngest member of the family, although I wasn't a spoiled child, my brother subsequently became a businessman. He went into the wholesale butter and egg business, and he wanted me to come to work for him, which I did after graduation of high school. And when you talked about education, I wanted to tell you that when I was a child, when we moved back to the city from the farm, there were visiting orchestras that came to town, and children were, the price of a concert was 25 cents per concert in those days. And my brother
said
that I attend the concerts, and my brother would come to the house. He was then married already. He would come to the house to make sure that I went to the concerts every Saturday afternoon. There wasn't a concert or a play. There was a Yiddish stage in those days. And even as a young child, my family always took me to the plays. Molly Pekin, Morris Schwartz, Paul Mooney, Molly Pekin.
P-I-C-O-N.
Right.
Who else?
Morris Schwartz.
S-E-N.
These are the best known Yiddish actors in those days. Paul Mooney was on the Yiddish stage in those days. My family, we all went to those things. And as a young child, they took me to these concerts. I had to go to all the plays and Shakespearean plays that were given, whether I wanted to or not. I remember one day my brother dragged me in by my hair. I had long hair in those days. I wanted to play Run Sheep Run, but he wanted me to go to the concert.
How old were you then?
Oh, I must have been very young, maybe 11, 12, 13, I don't remember. But I had to go to the concert. I remember Crusoe came here to the town, and would you believe that the minimum price of a ticket at that time was $6, and that was a lot of money. And my sister Goldie wanted me to be sure to go to hear Enrico Caruso. So that there was I venture to say
well, what
that
your
you
sister
did go.
Tell me about your sister. How did she get you to the concert to hear Caruso?
She
paid
too,
for
of course. We couldn't afford it.
Only for you, not for them.
Everybody went to hear
Enrico.
Everybody could.
So she bought tickets for everybody.
Went to hear Enrico Caruso because this was really an opportunity. As a matter of fact, I think it was the only time that he came to the city of Pittsburgh. And at that time, $6 a ticket was a fortune. But they took me along to the concert. Every Yiddish play I went to, I don't think I missed a Yiddish play.
What else did you do for recreation besides that?
We went to movies. My mother used to give me a nickel, and I walked from Wiley Avenue all the way down to the Davis Theater because we couldn't afford car fare. And she used to give me
was that in town, the Davis Theater?
And that's right. And we had to walk down there and come back by foot, too. If we wanted to go to the movie, they had the serial movies in those days. Pearl White, you know, from one Saturday to the next, there was a serial heavy. Went to the movies.
You never mentioned who you took the piano lessons from. Do you remember the name of the teacher?
Mm-hmm. How long did you take piano?
I took lessons for many years, and I do know that I can't play a note, and I was absolutely no good. Incidentally, none of our children are musically inclined either. They all took lessons of violin. In fact, they still took piano lessons when she was in college, and she didn't do too well at that either.
I wanted to ask about the health and medical care in Pittsburgh. Do you remember anything? Was anybody ever sick that you...
My family?
Yes.
No, we had been blessed with good health all the time. My mother had a high blood pressure always. In fact, that's one of our very sad situations. Everybody in my family that died either of a heart attack.
When did she die and what did she die from?
My mother died of a stroke.
When?
She died in 1930.
How old was she?
She was 68 years old. 68 in 1930 was old age. Mm-hmm. I remember when people came to play condolence call, they would say, well, you ought to be very grateful your mother died at a ripe old age, and I'm quoting people.
Did she know your husband at that time? You weren't married yet.
As a matter of fact, I was going with Maury already. You know how I met Maury? He was my superintendent when I was... I eventually became a Sunday school teacher because I had gone to Sunday school, and Miriam Schoenfield asked me to teach. And I used to go throughout the area here Sunday mornings, get up at 7 o'clock in the morning, to go to Braddock and Aliquippa and Mount Lebanon.
In one day you went all these places?
No. Oh. So Miriam would tell us where to go. Well, we went to one particular area and in one particular year. But I taught longest in McKees Rocks. But I would go all over the area. One year I would go to Aliquippa, another one to Braddock, another one to Duquesne, another one to New Kensington.
How did you get there?
By streetcar and not paid one penny for it. Paid our own streetcar. In most cases, McKees Rocks was generous. They paid our car fare, too. And then on Hanukkah, they would give us a box of candy.
Own fare to Braddock? Braddock, where else?
Braddock, Aliquippa, McKeesport, wherever she sent us, all over this area. But the longest that I was in
McKees
South
Rock.
Hills and McKees Rocks. Some of the people that I know right now, I used to teach Sunday school.
Did you get your training only when you were taught in Sunday school, or did they give you a training for this teaching?
No, only when I learned when I went to Sunday school.
Did you?
I was always one chapter ahead of my students. I studied.
Did they recommend the books?
Oh, definitely. We had a curriculum.
That's what I mean.
Yes.
You had some training.
Oh, there's no question about that. We had meetings regularly mm-hmm. with Miriam Schoenfield, and we would be told what the curriculum would be for particular schools, particular grades. And I got to be so good that I used to teach a confirmation class in McKees Rocks and in Beachview. I said, so I found it was Beachview. And incidentally, in Beachview, the Bethel, what is mm-hmm. now Bethel, used to have its services upstairs from a pool room on Broadway, the Beachview.
Above pool room.
Mm-hmm. And Maury, my husband, that's how I met my husband in the Keys Rocks. He was my superintendent. He was at Carnegie Mellon at that time, and that's how he earned some of his
He
money.
Was a student.
No, he was the superintendent.
No, but he was a student at Carnegie Mellon.
That's right. And he was paid $5 a Sunday. My mother always used to say she couldn't get over that I would get up Sunday morning, 7 o'clock in the morning. She always had a difficult time on weekdays to waken me to go to work.
How much was he paid?
$5
a day.
A Sunday.
A Sunday.
Superintendent.
Now, he was a student at Carnegie Mellon, and in what department?
Engineering. He never graduated. He quit after the second year because Jewish engineers were not hired. And he decided that he better get into a profession where he would be his own employer.
Well, where did he go for that training?
University of Pittsburgh. He graduated Devil's School.
When did he graduate there?
1920.
And what kind of a background did he come from? Was he
born?
Was
born in he was born in Freeport, PA.
Mm-hmm. Had his parents been born in Europe also?
Yes.
What, Russia?
No, in Latvia.
Was he? Did he have brothers and sisters?
He had one brother and one sister.
Are they still living?
Neither of them. One of the brothers living. He's a pharmacist.
What is his name?
Lewis. He's in California.
So, can you tell us something about your courtship?
The courtship in those days isn't what it is today. I went with Maury for 6 years before I married him. He says, I finally caught up with him. Let's see, I met Maury because he was my superintendent, and we were supposed to have been married actually 4 years prior to that time, but my mother died at the year the group before we were supposed to be married, and I observed the entire year. Then, when we were ready to be married, to announce our engagement, Maury's mother died, and we didn't get married for another year. The reason for it was that we were going to take a honeymoon trip around the world for 9 months, and we didn't want to leave. Even the mourning periods in those days were different than it is now. But we didn't get married for 2 years. First year because my mother died, and then his mother died, and chose not to leave the country. I remember that when we were supposed to get married, somehow it leaked out that we were taking this honeymoon trip around the world for 9 months, and he was taking trips like that, rich people. So the Post Gazette, or the press, I don't remember, it wasn't called Post Gazette in those days. Something else, and it may have been remember the name of the paper.
Sun Telegraph.
I got a call to wanted to have on Sunday wrote a reverse section, a whole spread about our wedding. We were having a big wedding and taking this honeymoon trip, and I said no, I wasn't interested. And in one end, publicity on. Well, he couldn't believe it. After all, who wouldn't want publicity like that? So they called Maury at the office. And Maury said, well, you'd have to talk to my fiancé. And he said, yes, we did, but she doesn't want it. He says, well, whatever she says is what the answer is. And I never got that publicity because I didn't want it.
Did he go to Europe or not? You did not go to Europe.
Took a trip around.
Oh, you did go around on your honeymoon.
Right.
I thought you said you
didn't. And I think that the trip around, this trip around the world, was a tremendous lesson to both of us. And I think it had a great effect.
What year was that?
1932. I've always said there were two things that that made a great impact on my life, and that was, of course, my mother, because she had...
Was that a nine-month trip, by the way?
9 months.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
9 months. First of all, because I was born in Russia, and I have a much greater appreciation of this country than any child that was born in the United States. Because unless you've been born in Russia, and even at my age, at the age of six, I realized what oppression meant and what a wonderful country this is. And even with the suffering that we had when we came over here, with child labor and no compulsory education after grade school, that the freedom that we had religiously was a wonderful thing. You can't appreciate it unless you've been born elsewhere and
never had it.
And never had it. And the other thing was that the hope of the people in Europe at the time, and I remembered very vividly, that the Jewish people should have a place where to go, a country of its own. Even though this was considered the golden land, America, the people were hoping that they would have Zion, the Shonar Bor, the Yerushalayim.
In 1932.
I remember that
as a
young child.
As a child.
And from when I remember that, even at the age of eight, when we came back into the city and I started at the Iron Coffin Settlement, the Zionist Hall was next door to the Iron Coffin Settlement. And I remember as a child, I was tagging for the Jewish National Fund at that time so that people could buy land in what was then Palestine. And I was from the time that I started grade school, as were most of the children, Jewish children, were doing something in behalf of Palestine, what was then Palestine. As an adult, I was active in petitioning the white, getting the white paper. Anybody who came through the city to speak on Palestine, we did something about it. Chaim Weizmann, Abba Hillel Silver, Jonah Wise, and Stephen S. Wise, they came through urging people to do something in behalf of Palestine. And if those of us who live today, the young people who jumped on the wagon, as it were, have absolutely no idea how difficult it was to get the community to realize how important it was. And it was difficult in that they just didn't want to have anything to do with it. Especially the German Jews. They wanted absolutely nothing to do with the hope of getting a Palestine. And it was so difficult that I remember when I became president of Hadassah, and I'll tell you how I became president of Hadassah. At that time, we had 400 and some members. And when I went out, we had 682. And when I remember the figure, because it was a tremendous success at that time for us to have gotten 200 and some new members. When we had
what year was this, Myrtle?
Well, when I came back from Palestine, I became president of
Women's
Johnson.
We've
skipped a part. In 1932, it came back in 1933.
Oh, after your honeymoon.
Mm-hmm.
So when you went
first,
around the...
Incidentally, my first organization that I joined as an adult, and I wasn't married yet, was Junior Council. And why did I join Junior Council? I had fond memories of a councilwoman meeting us at the Baltimore and Ohio Station. And Flora Rothenberg at that time was president of Junior Council, and I joined Junior Council. Subsequently, I joined Junior Hadassah, and I became president of Junior Hadassah.
Wait a minute. Don't go too fast.
Yeah, my mother-in-law was involved.
Now, wait, then you became president. When was that?
Well, I was married in 1932, so I was president for 2 years. So I was president of Junior Hadassah from 1929 to 1931.
That's before you.
Right.
But when did you join Junior Council of Jewish Women?
I joined Junior Council, as a matter of fact, probably 1929. I was active in both organizations at the same time.
And Flora Rothenberg was your contemporary?
She was my contemporary.
And she was president of the Junior Council?
That's right, at that time when I joined.
And what did you do for the Junior Council if you became president of the Junior Hadassah? What did you do for them?
I was on any committee that I was called upon. I certainly can't remember, but I was very active in both organizations. When we went on our honeymoon, we went across our own country first.
Let me write down the honeymoon. Wait, you left here and went to...
I was married incidentally at the Chamonix Hotel. you'll be interested to know, and I'm still laughing at it. You know, I was president of Junior Council. I was active in Junior Council. I was president of the Junior Hadassah. Maury was active in two fraternities, Alpha Omega, which is the dental fraternity, and Tau Delta Phi, which was an engineering fraternity. And in those days, so each of us sent an invitation to the two organizations, Hadassah particularly. And then, of course, we had a tremendous circle. I've always been very fortunate in the tremendous circle of friends. If I tell you that we had about 600 to 700 people at our wedding at the Chamonix Hotel, you'll never believe it.
You paid for it yourself?
No, my brother did. My brother and mine. No, my brother exclusively. He paid for it. He was, thank God, a successful businessman.
Was he married?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. At any rate,
600 people.
It was a very formal wedding. We were, you know, in those days we used to serve cookies and punch at weddings. Well, ours was a very fancy wedding. The ushers wore top hats and we had long dresses. It was a beautiful, as a matter of fact, to this very day, people still tell me, I remember your wedding.
Do you have pictures of it?
No. I have a picture of myself. You know, we were away. We took pictures that time, and we were gone for 9 months. And then when we came back, somehow I didn't go to the Trinity Court, by the way, to get the pictures, and they lost the film. But there was one picture in the paper at that time. So what was I telling you about the wedding? The men wore top hats, which was an extraordinary thing. They had to wear instead of yarmulkes, because after all, they were tradition. So wore top hats. We had real handsome men who were our ushers. There was Sam Sugarman.
Wait a minute.
Sam Sugarman and Harry Lefkowitz and Maury's brother Lou and Al Kulik, a cousin. And Dick Silverman, who is no longer here, Max Applebaum, right. These names must be familiar.
They are, most of them.
Well,
I had Sam Sugarman, Harry Lefkowitz, Dick Silverman, Max Applebaum,
and Lou Fisher, Al Kulik.
Wait a minute. Al, how do you spell that?
K-U-L-I-C-K.
Anyone else?
My nephew Barney Holtzman.
Now, those were the ushers. What about your friends?
Well, I had my nieces. My sister Anna was my maid of honor. My sister-in-law Sarah was my matron of honor.
Mm-hmm.
And my two nieces, Gert and Mel Holtzman, were my bridesmaids.
Gerd and Lil.
Mm-hmm.
Your sister-in-law was Sarah Holtzman.
Sarah Marcus.
Marcus.
That's my brother's name. Why did I bring that up? Then after the wedding, we went across our own country. And from there, we
went cross country.
We took the first boat at Vancouver, British Columbia, to Hawaii.
To Hawaii.
I don't remember.
How'd you cross the country? By train?
By train, indeed. The planes were flying already at that time.
How could your husband take 9 months off?
Well, he left his office with somebody else in the office at the time. I don't want to give you the impression that we were rich. We weren't. My husband did have some money. And he said to me one day, he said, "Do you want a diamond ring, or do you want a house, or do you want a trip around the world?" I didn't. Of course, I sort of thought he would buy me a diamond ring. A house, well, there was a possibility, but a trip around the world, well, it was absolutely ridiculous. I never even dreamed of that. So I said to him, "Of course I'll take a trip around the world," because I knew he was kidding. But he wasn't kidding. Well, the result was that because we were waiting for the mourning period of my mother and his mother, that I tell you that he had trunks full of literature that he was studying about this trip that we were going to take. And I shall never forget when he went to the American Express to get some information about something that he wanted to know. The man there said to him, "Dr. Fisher, right now you know more about world travel than I do. Just go right ahead and go wherever you want." He knew that much. He read everything that was humanly possible to be read. There wasn't a book in the library that he didn't read on world travel.
Then you crossed the country by train, boat to Hawaii.
We were on 13 different ships on this trip. We didn't fly at all until, well, we just didn't fly, period. I started to tell you what made such an impression was when I became, even as a young child, how important it was that I work for anything that had to do with Palestine. So that anything that came up in regard to Palestine, I participated in, even as a young child and throughout my years, because we knew how important it was.
Had this been emphasized by your mother or your sisters or your brother, or did you pick it up yourself?
Every Jewish family had that in their hearts. Every Jewish family.
But I mean, in your own home, how much emphasis was there?
In our own home, my sisters and my brother and any one of my relatives had that, and certainly my mother did. And I remember that wherever we lived, our wall, one side of our wall was covered with pushkins, you know, with boxes that had to do with something that had to do with Palestine or some other good cause. And this was the desire of any of you, even those who were the Freie Denkers, you know, the free thinkers who were really the pioneers of Palestine. They were the ones who went over there too. They really were the ones who did the work.
When you went on your trip around the world, how long were you in Palestine?
That's exactly what I wanted to tell you, what made such an impact. Because I had just gotten out of my presidency of Junior Hadassah, and because of this thing being drummed into me, and as it was in every Jewish family in those days, we went to Palestine, and we were there for one whole month. That was in 1932, and there was nothing there but sticks and stones, literally. There wasn't a blade of grass. The only thing, the only building, for instance, at that time was the YMCA, interestingly enough, and the Rutenberg Electric Works. That's all. And there were small hotels. We stayed at the Eden Hotel, where, incidentally, Henrietta Zold was there too at the time.
When we stayed at Eden.
Eden
Hotel.
Eden. Eden.
In Jerusalem.
No, this was in Tel Aviv. And the people that used to come there were the ones who were pioneering for Palestine. In fact, Rabbi Abba Hillel Silver was there at the same time.
Well, who else was staying? Rabbi Silver, who else?
Happened to meet Rabbi Abba Hillel Silver there at that time, too. He was there at the same time.
Someone else was staying?
Henrietta Zold.
Henrietta Zold was staying at the Eden Hotel at that time.
Well, where was he staying?
I don't know, but I happened to meet him on the street, and we just stopped and talked with him at that time. His parents were already there. He came to visit them. When we were there, the conditions were remarkable in that the people that came there, the pioneers that came there at that time, were the free thinkers, the ones who were disgusted with life in Europe. They knew that something had to be done about getting the people out of these countries that were oppressing the people. And who came there? The highly cultured people, like Ben Gurion, Yushish, and people of that caliber. I remember a family by the name of Ruderman, who lived in Pittsburgh. She and her two sons moved to Palestine because a daughter of hers who had just graduated Pitt, she sent her there as a gift after graduation from Pitt. She sent her to Palestine to see the country.